Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Are you sure about that?
Yep.
Bill's out of whack here. One earmuff dead, microphone in the wrong place.
Yeah,
well. Are you all situated now?
Oh, yeah, I'm good. I'm good to go.
So do you feel like you can talk about tractors just a little bit?
I think I can.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want you to, you know, blow a hamstring or anything.
All right. Well, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, and they've got everything you could imagine in the way of John Deere. Go by and see them. They got mowers, tractors, attachments. They're also a steel power products dealer and a Honda generator dealer. They got lots of those in stock. Give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And? Happy St. Paddy's Day. Later this week.
Oh, I was going to say.
Midweek.
Is that why your mic cover's green?
It is, too. Oh, okay. It's really green.
I don't know
what's going on with it, but it's really green. There's probably some toxic chemical on it or something.
That's a hot green right there.
It is, too. Oh, my goodness. So, let's see. You can catch up with all of our archives and people we've had on before and topics we've had on before for the last 10 and a half years. Actually, it's been a pretty long time. You can find all that at We the People Radio. Bill.
.com.
Oh, it's .us.
Oh, dang it.
You're totally fired.
I'm totally fired.
See, I didn't do it last week, so I thought this week, yeah, I'll catch
yeah.
Bill's like Curly on City Slickers. Remember how Curly was the one, it was about the one thing? Bill was doing his one thing.
One thing. You're right.
I saw him, he was totally in the zone working on his little tablet. Gosh, we should call this the Aaron Teases Bill Show.com.
Yeah, we could do a whole show on that.
I know, we could.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because...
Yeah,
because I have a lot of practice there. But you know what? Being the oldest of five kids from an Irish Catholic family, what did we do professionally from the time we hit the ground?
Come out swinging.
We teased.
Oh, okay.
It's all about teasing. Teasing and name calling. And our mom was really nice, and all she ever said was, can't we all just get along? But, you know, it just never took. There were a lot of things we learned. That was not one of them. It just didn't work for any of us, actually. It was clean sweep. All five of us got away, and... We're all just a wee bit mean-spirited. My sister told me I was a name caller. I was like, don't be an idiot.
No one's happy until somebody's crying.
Oh, yeah, that's totally true, too.
Yep.
Actually, that's really super true. Even as grown-ups, it's awful. Yeah, we just always go too far. Wow. Good thing Dr. Pride knows us, or he'd be like, okay, I got to go. I forgot what time it was. I'm busy this week. Craziness. But I guess in the midst of the insanity, if you're not finding anything to amuse yourself, try name calling. It works out. It's kind of fun. And anymore, you're in trouble for everything anyway, so you might as well just do what you want. There's nothing you're going to say that's going to be acceptable anyway, so might as well pick things you like. So our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, he's the executive director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security and the director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum. Both are congressional advisory boards. And he served on the Congressional EMP Commission, which is why we gave him a break last week and the week before, because we really wanted to talk to him about what happened in Texas, because we knew he was all over it and saw him on TV a bunch, because obviously he's been telling them stuff like that was going to happen for a really long time, and... He didn't listen. Bad news. So let's see. He was on the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission and the House Armed Services Committee. He was an intelligence officer in the CIA, and he was responsible for analyzing Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy. But see, outside of all that, and which makes him such a fun guest, is that he has a PhD in history and archaeology and another one in strategic studies, which is how he wound up in the CIA. And he's the author of numerous books. I would encourage you to read them, and we have linked them on the site. The Power and the Light is the most recent one. Subtitle is The Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America, 2001 to 2020. So it's, you know, all his stuff is super current. And then Apocalypse Unknown, that's a good coffee table book.
Yeah.
I think. Just,
who would
you know,
pick that up?
Yeah, just for the title. The Struggle to Protect America from an Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe. And honestly, if people don't even know what EMP stands for, You should smarten them up. Yeah. And we've listed the previous shows with him on here, and the archives don't cost you anything to listen to. Robert has graciously taken out the free enterprise moments, so the show is less than 2 hours, and do our best to make it as fun as we can, you know, in light of the topics.
And Dr. Pry also was on Sean Hannity here just not too many days ago. I heard him on the radio at, on Sean's radio show.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because all the stuff
he's everywhere.
He is everywhere. So, Dr. Pry, I bet this has been one of those told you so moments that you really didn't want to have, huh?
Well, Aaron Go Brah to you. Well,
see, there you go.
And happy St. Patrick's Day to you coming up on Wednesday, March 17th.
I married a Welshman, but I think everyone's forgiven me now.
Oh, nice. Well, I'm celebrating St. Paddy's Day today anyway.
Yes, St. Paddy's Day is just a great holiday. You know, it's kind of like going to Hawaii. You know, when you're Hawaii, they kind of treat you like everybody's Hawaiian. You know, St. Paddy's Day, we're kind of an inclusive bunch. Just go ahead and wear green, join in.
Yeah, join in. Drink some
don't talk
drink
crap
beer,
about our beer or our Irish whiskey. You'll be fine.
I agree. And Apocalypse Unknown would make it good. A good display book on somebody's on somebody's the coffee table it has a beautiful big picture on the front cover of a coronal mass ejection, an actual coronal mass ejection coming out of the sun, and a huge beautiful glorious picture of the sun with this huge coronal mass ejection spewing out, which is a real thing. It's not an artist's conception, because it's only recently that we've been able to photograph them, you know, only within the past 5 years when we put up satellites. And it's got inset in it a little blue dot, which represents the size of the Earth relative to one of these coronal mass ejections. Just by looking at the front cover, you can immediately appreciate, I think, the magnitude of the problem when you see how enormous these coronal mass ejections are compared to the Earth, and that when that thing eventually hits us, that it's going to ruin everybody's whole day. But fortunately, something short of that happened in Texas, but just an ice storm.
Yeah.
Not a geomagnetic superstorm, just an ice storm. And while ice storms of that severity are rare in Texas, you know, they do happen once every 25 to 50 years. And contrary to the Biden administration, Texas's vulnerability to this ice storm was not a consequence of climate change. You know, the climate isn't changing in the way that the Biden administration and the true believers think it is, such that we are going to end up having an environmental catastrophe in 10 or 12 years unless we embrace socialism and replace our current means of getting electricity with things like windmills and solar panels. You know, their solution, that's supposed to save us from the myth of climate change. And yet, they haven't explained yet if those things are supposed to be the answer, how come they weren't the answer in Texas? You know, because the first thing that failed, and the things that failed the most, were the windmills and the solar panels. You know, the sources of electricity that were least affected are the ones that are least popular. Nuclear power, nuclear energy, and coal-fired power plants. They're the ones that chiefly kept the lights on in Texas through the severe ice storm. And Texas shouldn't have had a significant problem if it weren't for politics. It wouldn't have had a significant problem. The Texas, what we may remember in the future is the Great Texas Blackout of 2021. It'll probably be remembered that way, should be remembered that way. I think the death toll is up to 100 now, maybe over that, as the number of people who froze to death as a consequence of the lights going out during these freezing temperatures. The cause of this was not climate change, but politics, as it usually is. And you know, the EMP Commission, which I served as the chief of staff for 17 years, warned back in 2017 that the current institutional arrangements we have for providing for public safety and national security to keep our electric grid going are inadequate. You know, they're not competent. They're inadequate to the problem. You know, I'm reluctant to actually start getting into the details because I don't want people's eyes to glaze over and start turning off their radios. But
well, except that people should know when they see things like that, they should know that those are, you know, canary in the coal mine moments, actually.
Yeah.
We're going to come back with our guest, Dr. Peter Benitz-Pry. We have to take our first break here. You are listening to We the People, and you can join us at We the People Radio.
.us.
Good job.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over but good. They want you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
There you go. I don't know if it's good, guaranteed to blow your head apart. That's probably not good. But anymore, all you have to do is turn on the TV.
Yeah, that's kind of commonplace nowadays.
Yeah, or the radio. Head's going to blow apart. So, Dr. Pry, just out of curiosity, do you have any idea why this topic doesn't seem to be something that... This just seems so far-fetched that people have a hard time believing it's real.
Could you repeat the question? Why?
I mean, I guess I'm always kind of every time we talk to you, all of the information makes perfect sense. We see the thing in Texas. I think all of us, except the, you know, the climate change groupies, figured out that this was caused by bad planning. Obviously, if you run out of power just because it gets cold, and I'm curious to know why you think, or maybe you guys have discovered a little bit why the power grid doesn't really hold much more sway with people.
Well, not sure that it's true that it doesn't.
That's
the
good.
The political process, when you consider how few of us there are on the side, well, I shouldn't say how few of us, because I do think that, you know, that there are many Americans out there, I hear from them all the time, you know, who do care about securing the power grid and protecting it and understand that. A lot of this is evidenced in my book, Blackout Wars, that has the story of efforts by state representatives and senators to get their grids protected in various states, you know, Maine, Arizona, California, North and South Carolina, Alaska, California, and Texas even. You know, even in California, a bill was passed demanding that the recommendations of the EMP Commission be implemented, that the California delegation take that position in front of the U.S. Congress. Unfortunately, the state of California itself, you know, hasn't done anything. In fact, their situation is they're among the most vulnerable states. As we speak, Senator Bob Hall on Friday in Texas is again introducing another bill, you know, to try to get the Texas grid protected. President Trump passed an executive order back in 2019 to implement the recommendations of the EMP Commission and get not only the electric grid protected, but all the life-sustaining critical infrastructures. Congress unanimously, Republicans and Democrats, I think it's the first time in history it ever happened, but they included a provision, an annex to the most important bill Congress passes. It's called the National Defense Authorization Act that funds the Pentagon. And this provision said, yes, we in Congress unanimously agree with President Trump's EMP executive order, and we are codifying it into law. so that it will have not only the weight of an executive order, but it is incumbent upon you, U.S. government, legally to implement it and make it happen. And the Biden administration has not suspended that executive order. In fact, I am told that they plan to go forward with implementation. In fact, I'm not just told, but I know they're planning to go forward with implementation, because I've actually been talking to some people in the new administration about what to do in terms of going forward with it. That doesn't happen if there's no public support.
That's good.
I think there is public support for it. I think there's actually quite tremendous support. And people do get upset. People are experiencing, as I said, 100 people died in Texas, hundreds died in California. The people and their friends and neighbors probably never heard about EMP, but they know there's something wrong with the electric grid. They know that the public safety is being neglected. And anyone with common sense could look at that and say, well, you know, if it's California, the utilities aren't even doing what's necessary to protect electric grid towers from being blown down by high winds, and they're not even taking out old trees that can fall on power line towers mm-hmm. and start forest fires. In 2019, there were forest fires all over California caused by an unsafe power grid, okay, and that killed hundreds of people, probably thousands. You know, the whole town of Paradise in California was wiped out. You probably know more about that than I do, being in California yourself.
Yeah, and the power companies are all being sued for it. You'd think just...
That's right. And their solution, the power company solution, they had obviously thought this through and said, do we spend money on protecting the grid from high winds and vegetation? Or do we let the worst happen and then have a strategy of declaring bankruptcy so that we can't be sued? They obviously tried the strategy of declaring bankruptcy, and the utilities are trying to do the same thing in Texas to escape responsibility for their neglect. The bottom line here is that, you know, I think people do know that the grid is not being managed safely, and that if the electric utilities cannot be trusted to do the simple things to protect against ice storms in Texas, to protect against wildfires in California. I mean, what an irony. You know, you've got the spectrum of bad things happening, almost like out of the apocalypse. People being burned to death in California, people being freezing to death in Texas, all because utilities wouldn't take simple precautions, you know, not technologically complicated, not even that, not very expensive, to stop these things from happening. Well, if they're not going to do that, how can we trust them to protect against sophisticated threats like an electromagnetic pulse or like cyber warfare? Obviously, they can't be trusted. And that's the problem. You know, despite all the bills and despite all the executive orders and despite all the initiatives at the state level, what all these things have in common is they haven't changed the fundamental institutional relationship, this boring thing that I'm about to bore your audience with, okay? And I probably have bored them in the past, but I'll try to make it brief.
They like it.
Because the bad guys in this scenario are called the United States Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, in other words, the U.S. FERC, and the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, the NERC. Now, the FERC is supposed to be the federal body that regulates all the electric utilities in the country to protect the public interest, to provide for public safety, reliability, and national security. That's what they're supposed to do. And the NERC is supposed to be the representative of the 3,000 electric utilities in this country that partners with FERC to make it happen. But the reality is what political scientists call regulatory capture. You know, this issue about the electric grid being foundational to our national security is new, and people haven't paid attention to it. It's only when the EMP Commission delivered its reports, you know, a decade ago, that this idea of the electric grid being foundational to national security came onto the radar screen. And for years and years, the FERC-NERC relationship has gone on basically in the dark without much attention being paid to it by the media or by anybody else. You know, and what has happened is the NERC has managed to make all the FERC commissioners former employees of the electric power industry, so that the commissioners are all former lawyers and lobbyists for the electric power industry.
Oh.
And then they serve on, you know, they serve there temporarily, and then they golden parachute back into the industry, you know, the rotating door. And so it's very hard to get FERC to do anything that NERC doesn't want. NERC, in effect, regulates itself. It's managed to establish what a 19th century type so-called regulatory relationship between itself and the U.S. government. You know, so in other words, it isn't regulated. It regulates itself, and consequently, it literally gets away with murder and is getting away with murder. And if this situation isn't changed, they'll get away with genocide. Because if we're talking about an EMP and a cyber attack or a cyber attack that shuts down the national grid for a year, you know, we're not talking about hundreds of deaths. We're talking about killing off perhaps 90% of the population through starvation, disease, societal collapse, and losing World War III, which is the likely context in which that's going to happen. So that's what's got to happen. You know, Washington has got to wake up to the fact that, you know, that it isn't enough to... The other thing I think that's happened is civilizational decline in a way. Yeah, I've talked about this before in the show. We're like the late Roman Empire, you know. There was a time in the America I grew up in, you know, in the 1960s and 70s and 80s, if the President of the United States passed an executive order, that executive order would be implemented. He's the commander-in-chief.
Sure.
If the Congress of the United States passed a law, the law would be obeyed by the U.S. government. The Congress is the law-writing part in the Constitution. You know, they write the laws, and the government has to obey the law. And that used to work, you know? And if the president and the Congress, you know, if the president writes an executive order and then it's codified to law, and it's a law by the Congress, which I think is the only time it's happened, you know, for EMP, then you've got a double whammy. You know, where the executive branch and the judicial branch have joined forces and ordered the U.S. government to do it. But it isn't happening in the late Roman Empire, in our equivalent of the late Roman Empire, because there's this thing that's grown up called the administrative state.
Yep.
That is it thinks of itself as a government unto itself, and the executive branch and the legislative branch are mere inconveniences. You know, it doesn't respect the Constitution. It thinks it knows better than anybody, and it's going to do what it wants to do. And and all it has to do is play a waiting game with Congresses and presidents and wait till they go away.
Sure, because they keep switching seats and, just wait them out. They say that. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure you know that, but it's interesting because the bureaucracy will say that. There was a VA issue like eight years ago, I guess, and the director of the big building where they do VA disability claims down in Oakland, he told his staff, he had a staff meeting, and he told them, don't worry about that congressman up north. He's a first termer. You know, we'll be done with him in a couple of years. Just keep doing what you're doing.
Right.
No concern.
He'll be gone. A president will be gone in four or eight years.
It was kind of great, though, when he got reelected, the guy retired. So that was...
His days were numbered.
He actually knew that his time was up. We've got to take a really quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Bry. We are talking about his article, actually. We'll talk about that more, but the title was so much fun, I couldn't resist. It is Bitcoin's Tulip Mania and Electric Grid Insecurity. I don't know if he wrote the title or the publication did. We'll give him all the credit because it's a fun title.
There you go.
Be right back. You're listening to We the People.
U.S. Oh, sorry. Jumped the gun there.
You can join us at wethepeopleradio.us.
it's time.
I love that song. Makes me laugh every
time.
I love
that song, too.
Something funny about it.
Right. Well, it mocks my profession, but that's all right.
That's what makes it funny.
Yes, right. Well, on the title of my article, my original title, I think, was slightly better.
Oh.
My original title was Of Bitcoins, Tulips, and Electric Grid Insecurity. And he'll change that to just Bitcoins, Tulip Mania, and Electric Grid Insecurity. I prefer my original title slightly more. But
well,
maybe
the fact
I
that it had tulips in there was like, huh? I mean, you know.
Well, exactly. That's why I thought it was a better title. Because if you want to know what those things all have in common, you have to read the article.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you have to wonder what Tulip Mania is, too. And I don't think the editor knew what it was until she read the article. But that's all right. I mean, it didn't. It's close enough to my original title that I wasn't too miffed about it. Sometimes they change the article title so dramatically that it really diminishes, I think. You know, because I do try to put some thought into what I title my articles. But anyway, I wrote that article before the Texas ice storm.
Oh.
And before, you know, it was in a period where I thought, you know, there wasn't going to be much attention to electric grid security because there wasn't that much happening at the time. And so I thought, well, the Bitcoin thing is a good hook. And I wrote that article then before the Texas ice storm happened and then modified it to incorporate the ongoing events in Texas later. But basically what that's about is, you know, and I was also trying to incorporate the super rich in support of our cause, because bitcoins, as your audience may know if they follow these things, are a form of cryptocurrency that there's a run on them now, and bitcoins have they don't exist physically. You can't hold a bitcoin in your hand. You know, they just exist as bits and bytes in cyberspace. And they're what's called a cryptocurrency, and they're now worth a single Bitcoin now is worth $50,000 for a single Bitcoin.
Wow!
Because the super rich have been buying them up like mad. And the Bitcoin was invented in 2009 by a person who's We actually don't know what his real name is. There is a name. It's in the article. But the name isn't actually a real name. It's a made-up name to disguise who the inventor was. And the because even the inventor wants to be cryptic and unknown. And the thing about a Bitcoin is that there's only 21 million of them in circulation. And Bitcoin is so designed so that there can't ever be more than 21 million bitcoins. Allegedly, there can never be more than that.
Hmm.
And the inventor made them that way deliberately to try to make them artificially scarce. And they weren't a big deal, you know, and in fact, when they were first invented, you know, they were criticized by some economists. Particularly, there was a Dutch economist, the head of the Dutch banking system, who compared the bitcoins to the tulip mania of 400 years ago, and you know, and basically said that during the tulip mania, you know, that actually a bitcoin potentially is even worse than the tulip mania, because when the tulip mania bubble burst, you'd at least end up with a tulip bulb, whereas if the bitcoin bubble bursts, you won't have anything in your hand. And for those who don't know it, you know, 400 years ago there was this. Historians argue over whether it was the first economic bubble, but tulips, the flower, were new to Europe, new to Western Europe, that had just been imported from the Ottoman Empire. This is in the early 1600s. And there was just a craze for them all across Europe. People loved tulip flowers. They were so new, so beautiful and everything. And Holland at the time, most people don't know this, but it was actually a superpower, a great power at the time. They had one of the biggest navies in the world. They had a world empire. Their state per capita income was higher than any other country in the world. And they had the most advanced economic system, including a stock market, an early form of the stock market. And tulip bulbs were so popular, they were even popular with the stockbrokers in Holland, who started trading tulip bulbs the way you would trade and invest in gold. And on paper, in just a few years, you know, because of the popularity of the tulip, the worth of tulip bulbs went up to 50,000 golden guilders for a single tulip bulb.
Wow.
Yeah, that's more than a skilled craftsman could make in 10 years, to give an idea.
For one bulb.
For one tulip bulb. Now this was all on paper, mind you, the way it works in our own stock market. That was the paper value. Because people just assumed that, you know, that the tulip bulbs were really going to be worth that, and that, you know, and that by buying the paper, the stock on tulip bulbs, you know, that you were basically getting the equivalent of whatever gold was. But then one day, I think it was in 1637, there was an auction where the paper stocks on tulip bulbs were to be traded. You were to trade real gold guilders for real tulip bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wanted to make that trade. And overnight, the bottom fell out of the tulip bulb market. And the tulip bulb lost its 99.9999% of its value. It lost that much of its value. It became basically worthless.
A weed.
Right.
Just another flower.
And that's the famous tulip mania. There was a famous 19th century book called The Madness of Crowds, and the tulip mania in Holland is one of his examples of how people acting as herds and not as intelligent thinking individuals, you know, how herd type behavior among human beings can lead a society off the cliff, you know, and that's basically what happened with the tulip mania is one example of that. Now, it may be, though, that the Bitcoin is not going to go the way the tulip bulb, because unlike tulip bulbs, Bitcoins do have some inherent value, but the inherent value they have is a real bad sign for the future of our civilization. You know, the reason the super rich are buying up cryptocurrencies, buying up Bitcoins, is because they the intrinsic value of Bitcoins is that governments have a very hard time figuring out how much wealth you have when your wealth is invested in Bitcoins. It's a cryptocurrency. And the usual methods of checking bank accounts and things like that that the IRS does to snoop around doesn't work. The other thing is that the Bitcoins, theoretically anyway, will protect you from hyperinflation, because the super rich are really concerned that governments all over the world are printing money like mad. The United States, you know, everybody, the pound, the yen, the dollar, they're all being printed out like mad to finance, you know, all the various COVID-19 and climate change and government spending that's just sort of gone berserk. And that someday, you know, reality will catch up with this government spending in terms of the actual value of traditional money, and there'll be hyperinflation. They're afraid of hyperinflation that will make the dollars as worthless as tulip bulbs. And so they see the Bitcoins as a security against that eventuality. So in effect, the value, escalating value of Bitcoins is a vote of no confidence by the super rich in the future of our civilization. Which is really ironic, since the super rich have had a major role to play in making our civilization what it is. You know, they tend to support the big spending governments that believe in climate change and spending trillions on COVID and all the rest. But when it comes to where do they put their dollars, they're putting them into Bitcoins, not into U.S. federal treasury bonds. You know, so the point of bottom line of my article was that, well, you guys, you super rich who believe in the Bitcoin and are investing in the Bitcoin, you'd better pay attention to what happened in Texas. You know, because you're also betting on the idea that electronic civilization is going to continue.
That's true, too.
And if electronic civilization doesn't continue, and we don't get a secure grid that can fail catastrophically like this, your bitcoins will become as worthless as tulip bulbs, too. Because cryptocurrencies all depend on the electric grid and on the technologies of electronic civilization continuing to work. So that was the theme of that article.
Sure, because if that goes down, you have no access to your Bitcoin.
Well, the other,
that's right.
The other thing, too, you know, people, you know, we look at the events of today through the lens of today, not always through the lens of history. And so I always think that's your... you know, that's your superpower. You bring in these historical things that if we heard about them, we forgot about them and didn't apply them to today. And it's like, you know what? That's sobering. That even back then, I mean, the idea today that you would put, you know, 10 years of wages against a tulip bulb, you think, well, that's ridiculous. But then you think about Bitcoin and, well, there's nothing there at all. You don't even have the tulip bulb. So that kind of makes you wonder about that.
You get nothing in your hand.
Got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You can find all this information and forward the show to your friends at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
You have to learn to pace yourself. Pressure. You're just like everybody else. You've only had to run so far, so good. But you will come to a place where the only thing you feel are loaded guns in your face, and you'll have to deal with
You know, it's kind of funny. We think that, you know, just here in modern times that we're stupid and that we would bank on things like Bitcoin. You know, we just thought of all that stuff. But
this, well, no, they've traded in
the 1600s.
Strange things in the past.
Tulip mania. We ought to do some kind of a contest for anybody whoever even remembers that or knew that. Thanks. You made us think about something new. I like that. So now that we've done that, what's your thought on where the Bitcoin thing is headed? Tulip Town, or?
Well, my thought is my mouth is watering for some Mount Shasta spring water to have with my whiskey on St. Patrick's Day as a chaser.
It'd be an excellent combination, by the way.
Absolutely. Well, in terms of Bitcoin, I don't know. The article was a call for the super rich to use their influence on the government to advance electric grid security, because it's in their interest to do it, even if they don't care about the survival of 330 million Americans, which they probably don't.
Now they're busy funding depopulation efforts, so come.
Presumably they care about their own wealth. And if they did, you know, if they want to keep their bitcoins more as from losing their value and becoming worthless as tulip bulbs, you know, then they should pressure the Congress and the government to do what's necessary to correct the institutional problems. And in the aftermath of writing that article, there were a couple of things that happened to give me some hope. You know, we now have a cybersecurity czar in the White House, you know, which is a first-time thing, and this has been authorized by Congress. So there is a person in charge of cybersecurity protections of everything, which would include the electric grid, to oversee these matters. And that's what I had recommended in my book, EMP Manhattan Project, and it's one of the things the EMP Commission recommended, you know, that they actually have a And unfortunately, the Trump administration, well, it's not entirely true that Trump didn't have an EMP czar. Under the president's EMP executive order, Trump was the EMP, was basically the EMP slash cyber czar. But, you know, a president has too many distractions, too many things going on, you know, to be able to focus and include, and his, as does his national security advisor. But so now at least there's one person in the White House who has the responsibility for overseeing all of this. And with the powers of the White House and the Congress being behind you, maybe something will happen. And the other thing that gives me hope is that there have been a series of things that have happened in very short order. I mean, one of the big disadvantages we always seem to have is that these things happen a year apart, 2 years apart, you know, and Washington doesn't have a long memory. So these things get forgotten. People get all excited about them when they happen. And there's all kinds of talk about fixing the problem. And then some other problem comes up, and they get distracted, and everybody forgets about it. It goes away. But we've had three developments, you know, that in a row over a relatively short period of time. You know, last year, in December, the revelation about the big solar winds cyber attack by Russia, you know, that penetrated so deeply into the U.S. government, basically the most, potentially the most damaging cyber attack that ever hit us. And it was done in close coordination with a strategic forces nuclear exercise, personally led by Vladimir Putin, where he actually executed live ICBM and sublaunched ballistic missile launches and cruise missile launches and a real, you know, real missiles being really launched, you know, and an anti-satellite, actual live anti-satellite exercise, putting up a new anti-satellite weapon. All of this stuff happening around the solar winds hack, so it's really kind of hard to ignore that or forget about it, which is why we've got a cybersecurity czar in the White House. And then just when after the elections and the aftermath of the elections is about when we would start as a government forgetting about these things. But then the ice storm happened in Texas, and we've got 100 dead people, unfortunately. But maybe all this tragedy and loss of life, property damage, you know, will be redeemed if it means the country will get protected. And I was pleased to see that in Texas, the bad guys, there's this organization called ERCOT. You know, they're basically the NERC for Texas. You know, they're the representative for the Texas Electric Utilities. They're the ones who have been blocking Senator Bob Hall's bills, or watering his bills down so that they don't accomplish anything by doing endless studies. And I was pleased to see that half the board of ERCOT has been forced to resign. So that's so the government of Texas doesn't trust them anymore. That's a big, good development.
Yeah.
So you've got those two things, the solar winds, cyber attack, unprecedented cyber attack on our society and our critical infrastructures. Then, you know, the example right in front of our eyes of what's happening in Texas, you know, just happening now. And now last week, after I published the article, I've got a new article coming out about this one. Last week, China threatened to black out India. And, you know, what's going on is India and China have been fighting a low-intensity war in the high Himalayas over the border. Ever since China illegally annexed Tibet in 1951, China has periodically tried to expand at India's expense, you know, pushing out along the Himalayas. And India, of course, has resisted that. But today, both India and China are nuclear superpowers and can turn each other's cities into mushroom clouds if either side goes too far. So the war in the high Himalayas, you've got two nuclear powers fighting a Stone Age war in the Himalayas because both sides are refraining from using modern weapons to fight it. And it's being fought with shovels and clubs and fists, you know, up close and personal, just like Stone Age combat. And so what happened last week, China tried to break the stalemate and get India to back off, apparently by blacking out the city of Mumbai, which is a huge city. Millions of people live in Mumbai and in that region. And, in effect, threatening to black out the whole Indian national electric grid, you know, which they demonstrated they could do by blacking out Mumbai. And this is just another sterling example. I mean, I'm hoping that this will be one of those Monitor versus Merrimack moments in military history. You know, like during the Civil War, the two ironclads, the Union ironclad Monitor, fought the Confederate ironclad. Its actual name was the Virginia, not Merrimack. But histories written by the North tend to describe it as Monitor versus Merrimack. Merrimack was the original name of the ship before the Confederacy turned it into the Virginia. And this basically ended the age of sail and of wooden ships and was just a transitional moment that changed everything in naval warfare. And I think the implications here are even bigger, where you've got, I mean, the not only has China demonstrated the capability to black out another nation and has demonstrated the political will to do that, but maybe the most important lesson from this is China considers it less escalatory, less dangerous for it to threaten to black out India's electric grid than to actually conduct, you know, normal combat in the high Himalayas, you know, rather than resorting to gunfire and pistols. That's too escalatory. Oh, but it's not so escalatory to black out the Indian electric grid. Here's an option short of classical warfare. They consider it a gray zone kind of aggression. Very dangerous idea, because in effect, blacking out the electric grid would be catastrophic for India. You know, it would be as bad as a nuclear war. If it's a protracted blackout, you end up killing millions of people and destroying the society. India's an electronic civilization. And this has to be remembered or understood in the context of President Biden's recent decision to suspend President Trump's executive order that was designed to end U.S. supply chain dependency on electric grid equipment from China. You know, we've got 300 big transformers in our, among our 2,000 transformers.
Hold that thought, because we're going to get into this last minute and get cut off at the pass here by the news. But I think that's, you know, this big, let's write a whole bunch of executive orders, and by the way, let's erase all the other ones. Never really a great plan.
We'll be right back with our
guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. We have him hostage for another hour. See, that's when it's good to do a show on Sunday afternoons. So you can find everything about the program at We the People Radio.
.us.